right, everyone. We are back for another episode of the Hauenstein Center's podcast series, Off the Stage. My name is Maddie Miller. I'm the media specialist for the Hauenstein Center. Today, I am interviewing Kalia Burke-Gadsden, executive director of the Song Foundation. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure.
Oh, good. Okay, so for those of you who have never heard of the Song Foundation, it was created to support movements and leaders who are creatively disrupting systems of inequity in Southeast Michigan. Kalia, can you tell us briefly in your own words, like what the Song Foundation does?
So we are a startup foundation, which I think is really, really important. We were founded in 2019 by Doug and Lynn Song. I came on board in, 2022 as the inaugural executive director and was really charged with helping Doug and Lynn as individuals really transition from personal philanthropy to organizational and institutional philanthropy. And I would say the DNA of our foundation is directly tied to their work as individuals and their values, which is really important in family philanthropy. So by training, Doug is a tech entrepreneur and he founded Duo, which was Michigan's first unicorn. And then Lynn is a social worker. And so they have always and had always given to grassroots organizations, nonprofits who are focused really on the social service net, and also supporting like BIPOC leaders as well as immigrant communities. And so that's really who we are as a foundation. We really aim to amplify joy and prosperity and equity in the region, and also really focus on relationship building throughout the state and how as a state we can be more welcoming, we can be more prosperous, and really how we can be a little bit more forward thinking and innovative.
That's awesome. That's so cool to hear. For those of you listening, I'll definitely link the Song Foundation's website in the description so you can go check out more. But Kalia is actually here for in Grand Rapids for our Wheelhouse Talk Meyer Lecture Series collab that's happening tomorrow. By the time this episode publishes, it probably has already passed, but do not fret. You can go listen to Kalia's talk in podcast form or video form at the link in the description. So make sure you check both of those links out below. All right, so we're going to jump into what I was telling you earlier, the famous BOQ bowl of questions. So for those listening, these are questions that were submitted by people in our community. So they're kind of just fun. So if you want to reach in there and pull out a little question, read it for us, and then you can answer it.
Sure, I'm so excited to do this.
Good.
Let's see. All righty. Any movies, TV shows, podcasts you want to recommend? Okay.
Oh, okay.
So I used to be more of an avid reader, mm-hmm. and life and kids and work, I haven't really been reading a lot, but I'm close to finishing my first book in more years than I want to actually share. But it's Viola Davis's book, her autobiography, and I'm really inspired by that. I mean, you have just no idea when you look at her and when you see a lot of the accolades and things that she's had maybe over the past 10 years, just her kind of family of origin story, a lot of her kind of struggles and challenges. And so she delves very, very deeply kind of into her personal story, but then also how she worked through her own trauma, through therapy, and has really transformed her life. And I was just really inspired by that. Let's see, when it comes to TV shows, so I was a Succession fan.
Okay.
I love Succession. Yep. And then recently started getting into Billions.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people are either Succession fans or fans of Billions. Okay. So I've just started watching that, but I don't watch a lot of TV. Yeah. I've tried to transition and really get into bed early.
Yeah.
And that's then this is going to be really, really funny, but the last movie I saw was actually the Taylor Swift
Eras Tour.
The Eras Tour.
Love that. Oh my gosh, I've got a little friendship bracelet going on today. Yeah. So
my girls, especially the oldest, she is a Swiftie, and We went to see that. She asked me this week kind of what my favorite movies are. So I really like, these are probably old school classics, but Heat, which is a Robert De Niro film. But then also we were talking about The Color Purple. I haven't seen the new one, but Heat is one of my favorite movies.
Okay. Yeah.
Robert De Niro, Al Pacino.
Okay, never seen it, so adding it to my list.
Yes, I love it.
Oh, that was a perfect question for you. I love it. Let's do one more.
Okay, bullet questions,
just because they're fun.
Let's see. Dig a little deeper this time. All right. Do you have a favorite Halloween costume you've done? If not, is there a costume you'd like to do someday? Mm. Well, little known fact, I never went trick-or-treating in my entire life.
Wow.
So I came from a faith community where, like, trick-or-treating was not.
Yeah. Hey, same. literally same.
That's right. And, like, I was born in the 70s. So in the 80s, it was, like, people were concerned about, like, you know, blades and candy. And that was back when you would take your candy to the hospital and they would get it x-rayed. So I'm a little older. So I never really dressed up for Halloween.
If you were to dress up, though, is there like a costume that you'd want to do? Or
yes. So I'm trying to think. It would be some sort of superhero.
Love that.
So yeah, it would be some sort of superhero, Wonder Woman, or what is the Marvel character? Black Widow.
Black Widow,
Something like that. Yep.
You should just even just throw a themed party. I mean, it doesn't have to be Halloween. Like, just throw a superhero party and then you can live out that dream.
I will, definitely.
I love it. Okay, well, thank you for answering our BOQ questions. So now to just get into more of like the interview and just hearing more of your story.
Sure.
I always love to like just bring it to the beginning. So tell us like where you grew up.
Okay.
What were you interested in as a kid? What were you like? What kinds of things did you find interesting?
Yeah. So I'm from Central Indiana, right outside of Indianapolis. So Midwestern girl, born and raised.
Love that.
I think it's important for people to understand like I was an only child for nearly 7 years. So a lot of my formative years were really spent with my parents, my grandparents, and I was fortunate enough to grow up with my great grandparents. So didn't have a lot of like friends. You know, I had cousins and that was like my friend group. I have always been a nerd. So I did a lot of reading when I was younger. Was interested in, you know, art. And so I took art classes and went to art camps. But then in about, I think, third or fourth grade, I discovered basketball. So I played year-round travel AAU basketball from the time I was in fourth grade until I graduated from high school. And that's how I ended up here in Michigan. So I was recruited actually to play basketball at the University of Michigan. And the recruiting process went a little left. And I had already applied and gotten in. And I was like, I'm just going to go to U of M and didn't really know too much about it. I wanted to get away from home because I had grown up in Indiana. And so I'd, you know, visited like Purdue and IU and Butler, you know, and had older friends there. But just thought, you know, I know Indiana colleges. I want to go someplace that's far away, but still close enough to home. So, and I think, you know, playing sports and basketball specifically really shaped kind of how I think about teams and leadership and all of that. But even now I'm a big sports fan.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so is there any like lingering, like, do you follow any basketball teams? Like who do you cheer for?
Oh yeah. So I'm a big Steph Curry, Golden State Warriors fan, not just, you know, for kind of the joy and kind of the skill that they have, but really from an organizational culture standpoint. I love how they talk about, or used to more so talk about, kind of how joy was a theme in their organization and really having fun. When it comes to football, I don't know. I grew up with the Indianapolis Colts, so that's always hometown, but Haven't watched a lot of football, but definitely tuned into the Super Bowl. Yeah. I do like Travis Kelce, yeah. even before Taylor Swift.
I was just going to say, is it because your daughter's a Swiftie?
even before. Yes. But, you know, we watch all sports, tennis, been to the U.S. Open a few times. Cool. We're a big sports family.
Yeah. And so you went to University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. So do you cheer for University of Michigan sports?
Oh, of course. So I've gone to football Big Ten Championship. Cool. Was all keyed in during the national college playoffs.
I was just going to say, your team definitely. Won, so.
ordered some championship sweatshirts and all of that. Yeah.
That's
so
cool. That's so cool to hear.
I love it.
Cool. So you went to University of Michigan. I always love to ask people, like, how did you decide what to major in? Did you ever, like, change your major during college? And then what did you finally graduate with?
Yeah. So because I loved sports, my initial goal was to work in the sports industry. So my undergraduate degree is actually in sports management and communications, which is a little known fact. I worked in health clubs, athletic departments earlier in my career, and then really decided, like, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life, because at that time sports wasn't as much of a business as it is now, and I was like, I don't want to throw like t-shirts at halftime for the rest of my life, right? That's like when you're an intern and entry level, that's what you do. So I ended up pivoting and selling real estate and commercial real estate, which is what led me to pursue my graduate degree in urban planning. And in graduate school, I focused on real estate development and really kind of fell in love with the built environment and trying to understand why, like, cities and communities and even states kind of shift over time.
Yeah, that's cool. I was going to ask that question, how you did that shift to urban planning. So yes. That's really cool.
Yeah, but I laugh all the time because it's like, why didn't I pursue a career in sports broadcasting? Like,
you would have made a great reporter.
I'm like, well, why didn't? But I just it wasn't on my radar then.
Yeah, that's funny. Hey, there's still time.
I know you the podcast, right?
Yes, that's right. Definitely still do that. Okay, so I want to hear kind of like a breakdown of your career path. So I saw I was looking at your bio, and you used to work at the Kellogg Foundation, which is awesome. So I just want to hear kind of all those, like, different steps once you got into urban planning, how then you ended up at Song Foundation.
Yeah, so like I said, I became obsessed with really, communities and economic development. A lot of it had to do with selling real estate and selling commercial real estate, which I really loved, like the art of the deal and the negotiation. And so I used to spend so many, nights and days and weekends coming to Detroit from Ann Arbor and showing clients around and doing research. And this was like in the, kind of early 2000s, and really trying to understand opportunities, and then really started reading, articles and reports, and was introduced to kind of community development as a profession and as a field. And so in graduate school, I received an internship at the Downtown Detroit Partnership, which is like, a traditional, civic organization where you have major corporations and foundations who really advocate for like the downtown core. And they have them in most major cities. And from there, I did a stint at a state authority, so the State of Michigan Land Bank. Ooh. Okay. And led acquisition programs, real estate development programs at the state level and really all across the state. Then we had, suffered a horrible recession and a lot of vacant properties. And there was federal funding that came from D.C. to really support the acquisition of vacant properties. And it was at Grand Rapids, Detroit, Benton Harbor, Flint, and then went from the state level to hyper local area. I had a baby in 2011, and just decided to work in a neighborhood community development corporation. And my commute then was 4 minutes long.
That's awesome.
As I told you, I didn't like to drive.
Yes.
And so I lived and worked in the same neighborhood. And that was a comprehensive faith-based organization that had been around for about 25 years. And so we did workforce development, real estate development, early childhood education, and community beautification projects. And from there was actually recruited into philanthropy. And although I had always worked with foundations, in really any organization that I had worked for, you know, either we were consulting to foundations or receiving funding from foundations or partnering in some way, but I had never thought I wanted to work inside a foundation.
Yeah,
and I'll share a little bit more about that tomorrow, but was recruited into philanthropy. It was a wonderful opportunity, really going from a local nonprofit, where as an ED, you're responsible for raising, right? Mm-hmm. Everything, to an organization where you don't have to raise any money. You're in a resource rich environment, right? So you're kind of going from like the land of lack in some ways to a land of extreme privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And so did a stint at the Kellogg Foundation and really loved the work there and really poured my heart and soul into creating a vision for early childhood education in Detroit called Hope Starts Here. And that was my baby until we ended up welcoming home another baby in 2018 and decided to go back to consulting.
Okay.
And was happy building my consulting practice. I worked with a lot of, you know, state organizations here in Michigan, national nonprofits, again, foundations, and then a mutual acquaintance introduced me to Doug and Lynn. And so he was one of my former bosses at the Kellogg Foundation who was leading a search firm and reached out to me and said, "Hey, Kalia, would you consider coming back to philanthropy?" And I was like, "Nope." And, you know, he would call, he would call like every 6 months and say, "Hey, I got a new opportunity for you to consider." And I'd be like, "Nope." And then one day he said, "Kalia, what would it take for you to return to philanthropy?" And I said, "It would have to be something different than what I've experienced before." And for me, it was really about what I call a more humane way of working.
Okay.
You know, with two young children, I wanted to be, you know, flexible schedule. This was all before the pandemic, right?
Because mm-hmm.
now,
yeah.
right,
well,
yeah.
Everything's flexible.
Right, everything is kind of flexible now, but I wanted to be, you know, have the flexibility to be more present with my children, to really prioritize my health and my rest, and have been able to do that, leading the Song Foundation. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that, like, thinking about prioritizing, like, working moms and, you know, family and rest and mental health. Like, that's awesome.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's, I mean, it's, you know, it's a very necessary discussion. I think within the social impact sphere, one of the, you know, dirty little secrets is that most nonprofit professionals or even those who work in philanthropy don't necessarily have good work-life balance. And there's usually a lot of stress, especially on the nonprofit side. And we like to think that because we work in a nonprofit or in the nonprofit sphere and not like for a for-profit corporation, that our bodies can tell the difference, right? And my doctor was like, "No, your body doesn't care."
Yeah.
Like, if you're working to make money or if you're working for the good of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, stress doesn't discriminate in that way.
Yeah, that's so true. That's awesome to hear. So my next question for you is, so this year, this academic year, the Howe and Science Center's programming is focused around the idea of empowered citizenship. So that's kind of our theme for the year.
Okay.
And so we're just, you know, thinking about how we can empower others to be, you know, better citizens of our world, make our communities better, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a cool, like, thread I've been sewing through all of our podcast episodes is asking our guests, like, what does does it mean for you to empower others to be citizens? What does empowered citizenship mean for you? And this can be, you know, in your professional life or in just in your personal life.
So I think empowered citizenship actually starts at home or can start at home. Like when I think about kind of what that means to me, I think about my parents. My mother was a public school teacher for 30 plus years. My father was kind of a, I guess now he would be called an organizer. Back then he was just like a citizen who showed up at meetings and asked questions, right? And tried to get other people to go to the meetings. He ran for public office in my hometown. But just being engaged, like, you know, reading, knowing what's happening in your local community. I just left a meeting last week where people were talking about not just younger generations, but in general, how people are disengaging from the public sphere because they don't believe that's what's happening in government at all levels is productive or that it's reflecting the needs of, you know, citizens. And I think that's a scary place for us to be in because whether or not you vote or you show up to the meeting, people who are there are going to be making decisions that affect your life. And for me, I'm, you know, uncomfortable with like at least not knowing what decisions are being made, especially if, you know, my life can be affected positively or negatively by them. I also think being engaged means, you know, being passionate about the things that you believe in. And one of the things we talk about at the foundation is really widening the table, right? And so thinking about who's at the table, but who's missing and providing opportunities for others to be at the table. I think that's vitally important because we're at this crux kind of in our demographics, right? As a state where we're aging really quickly and younger residents are either leaving or if they're staying, they don't really see kind of how they can plug in. And so we have to do a better job of being inclusive across all identities. And then I also think it means being hopeful about the future, right? My daughter a couple of weeks ago got so mad at me because I was like, if we're going to have, you know, global warming, can I have mine with a side of sunshine? Like, you know,
I love that.
I was like, yeah, you know, like 45 degrees is cool, but it's still like, you know, depressing if there's no sun. And she really was upset with me. She's like, you don't care about the world that I'm going to inherit in the future. And I really need you to be thinking about, you know, the state of the world. I was like, I'm not saying that I want global warming, but if it's inevitable, can I have mine with sunshine? But
yes.
I think that we also have to be hopeful. Like you have to have some sense of hope to be engaged because that means that you believe like through your action and your participation, you can actually shift, right, the events that are happening in your community. And I think maybe that's why people are disengaged because they've lost a sense of hope.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, that's awesome. I love hearing all of those different perspectives because empowered citizenship means something different to everybody.
Yeah, so I
love that. So another question I wanted to ask you was, and I know that this is broad, mm-hmm. so, you know, take it anyway, but I love to just hear, like, when you have thought about your career thus far, done a lot of different things, like, what is something that comes to mind that really makes you proud of, like, something you've done?
I think, you know, this is probably not the answer that people listening will want, but you know, I'm proud of everything, you know, and it's not to say that everything turned out the way that I wanted it to, or that I anticipated it to be. But all those opportunities and jobs kind of led me to this point in my career.
Yeah.
And so, you know, without all of those trials or tribulations or successes, I don't believe that I would be here, nor do I really believe that I would have the same type of appreciation for the work that I do or just for the people that I meet. So I'm always really trying to have that conversation with younger professionals, just to relax a little, which, you know, I wasn't relaxed early in my career, I was always kind of striving or, you know, trying to push to understand how I could get more experience or how I could show up differently, how I could get the job that I really wanted. And all of that came actually through a lot of personal tragedy, right? A point in my career when I was really sick, where I had to take a big risk and kind of bet on myself. And then through all of that, right, this beautiful opportunity to create something new, and to help set the type of organizational culture that I had always been searching for in my career. So it all kind of works together, you know, in a good way. And that's what I really believe. But if I had to point to, I think, two things, it would be one, Hope Starts Here. Like I said earlier, that was really my baby. And after I transitioned from the Kellogg Foundation, I would still go to meetings, but just as a parent, you know, because I have, you know, kids as well. And I remember sitting in a meeting where a woman said, you know, this initiative and the work that was done to engage parents and thinking about a vision for like how Detroit could really prioritize its youngest citizens and residents. She said this was the first time, right, that I ever felt that there was this large initiative where people like saw the hope of our future, right, the future of children in our city, and decided to focus on like who they could be and what they could accomplish with more investment versus kind of what as a city we are lacking. So that kind of made me tear up in the meeting, like, oh, all the hard work, you know, really, really so mattered. Cool. So, you know, I love kids. So, yeah, that's awesome. That felt good.
That's awesome. I love hearing those types of stories and just those things. Yeah, I have to ask, you talked about this with kind of like your reason for wanting to initially go into sports, mm-hmm. but you also just mentioned like organizational culture and like team culture. If you had to give like one piece of like advice to a team or to a leader of a team to like improve its culture, what's like one thing you would say?
Wow, just one thing. Yes. Well, I could say kind of what a pet peeve of mine is, yeah, right? Please. It's like, I hate when people use a team analogy, but they don't really understand what teams do or how they operate, right? Yeah. So if you're going to really create a team, you have to know what makes a team and how teams, in order to be successful, have to operate, right? And leaders, you know, have to have skin in the game, right? You have to show that you're willing to do whatever you're asking members of your team to do. Like if you want your team members to stay up late and complete something, then you've got to be willing to do it as well. People also perform better, right? When they're happy, when they're well rested, when they're engaged, where they feel value. And that's all a part of healthy team culture. I think over my career, especially when I was younger, I hated when bosses would always talk about the team, the team, the team, and then they would never show up. They would never sacrifice. They would never have your back, right? They would always blame others for, you know, they would do all of that. And I would just be like, you don't even know how a team operates.
Yeah, yes.
So it's like using the team analogy to manipulate people, right? Yeah. To do things that you yourself aren't willing to do.
Yeah.
That's not a team.
Yeah. That's cool. I love hearing that. I'm in my first job out of college, and I have great team culture, but it's cool to hear. So it's good to hear like things like that so I can like pay attention to that throughout my career.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's vitally important for, I mean, you think about it, most people spend more time working, unfortunately, here in the U.S.
Yes.
than they spend anywhere else. And so if you don't feel valued, if you're not well rested, if you're not invested in, right, that just creates a negative feeling about your work and how you're showing up every day, and you're not going to be able, your performance isn't going to be high. And so what I love about working with Doug and Lynn in particular in our small but mighty team is we talk about like doing good work. Well, some members of the team have said not good work, like we want to do excellent work with good people while having a good time, right? So it's like we always try to find a way to infuse like laughter or fun or even like the sharing of a meal together, you know, with our team and with others as a way to build relationships and community.
That's awesome. That's so cool to hear. Okay, so I have one more question for you, which is the question I always end every podcast with, which is just if somebody wanted to go into a similar career as you, so maybe in a foundation, in philanthropy, in urban planning, whatever, what advice would you give them?
So I do think coming into philanthropy once you've had complementary experiences allows you to really distinguish yourself. So I do have a few colleagues who've like started their careers in philanthropy right out of undergrad, and they've excelled and they're in leadership positions now. But I think having a variety of experiences allows you to understand kind of the nonprofit landscape, how nonprofit leaders are feeling, the type of support that they need. I would always say, like, I wanted to be the type of program officer that I never had before. What I love about urban planning is like you understand not just the current state of a community or a neighborhood or right of the world, but we also understand kind of systemic issues that have shaped the creation of some of the problems that we have. And I think across the board, urban planners are usually, you know, and this is not just me, but are usually, articulate. They're usually great writers. They like understand how to draw like threads through a number of different issues. And so we understand the past, but then we're also trying to help people envision a better future. So, explore, take different classes. That's what I did. So I took a couple of classes in the urban planning department before I applied to grad school, which really solidified like, this is something I want to pursue.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love hearing even that like really practical piece at the end, like before you just decide on something, like really try it out. So that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of these things, Clea.
Thank you.
So excited for your Wheelhouse Talk tomorrow,
Thank you.
I mentioned for those listening in the beginning, there is going to be a link in the description below where you can find that talk with Stacey Stout, which is going to be, I'm anticipating, is going to be awesome. So you should definitely check that out. And thank you so much for all of you who are listening.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to Off the Stage Podcast, a series produced by the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. The Hauenstein Center, inspired by Ralph Hauenstein's life of leadership and service, is dedicated to raising a community of ethical, effective leaders for the 21st century. For more information on our center, our Cook Leadership Academy, or our Common Ground Initiative, visit our website at www.gvsu.edu/hc. To keep up with our current events and reoccurring initiatives, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn, all of which can be found linked below. If you liked this episode, consider giving us a review or rating so we can be found by other podcast listeners. Again, thanks for listening to Off the Stage Podcast.